Do the tough things first.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. Zinn covers the gamut from the essence of human happiness.
Having value is key to human happiness.
To the downside of venture capital for entrepreneurs.
Venture capital can be the antithesis of entrepreneurial spirit.
The essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
An entrepreneur without determination is truly an oxymoron.
Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO.
Welcome to the Tough Things First podcast. I am David J. Greer, your guest interviewer today. I'm thrilled to chat with Ray Zinn, the longest serving CEO in Silicon Valley and author of Tough Things First. The reason I'm so excited is that I've lived the entrepreneur's life, having helped to start and build a software company to a lot of success over many years. Today, I'm a business coach helping entrepreneurs succeed, but I really enjoyed reading Ray's journey in his book, Tough Things First, where he shares his entrepreneurial journey. And one of the lessons I saw him give when I read the book was about how to stay focused on what is important. Well, let's get started. Welcome, Ray.
Well, thank you, David. Thanks for joining us today. This is really a pleasure on my part.
Well, thank you. I'd like to talk to you about strategic planning and the strategic planning processes that you developed at Micrel. I know the company was profitable for 36 out of 37 years, and I know from my experience that that doesn't happen by accident. That happens by plan. And so I want to learn more about what was involved. So the first thing I'm curious about is, how did you do your strategic planning, and you know, what did that process look like?
You know, that's really an interesting story because that's gone back and forth over the years. We've done 1-year plans, 2-year plans, 3-year plans, 5-year plans, 10-year plans, and it's really interesting that we try them all. In other words, you say, okay, the reason for doing long-range plans is so that, you know, your investors and customers ask, you know, how's the company going to do over time? And so you put together this model. And it looks like up and to the right at a 45-degree angle. You know, I mean, it looks fantastic. But that's not what happens in the real world. You know, you have macroeconomic problems that affect the outcome of the plan. And so after a while, people lose faith in a long-range plan. So then you say, okay, we're going to have a worst-case plan, a normal plan, a best-case plan. It seems like everybody focuses on the best-case plan because it gives them the most upside, and then you miss it, and then you don't accomplish it. So, and they don't want the worst case plan because it minimizes then what they can do. I mean, it limits the headcount and limits the inventory build and so forth. And so, there's no really good way of doing this because of people's perceptions of what is the plan. The way I've been most successful at running a company profitably for 36 out of 37 years is by setting a model, meaning I modeled what the company would look like under certain revenue conditions. And that model, you know, we learned over time, but the model is very important because it really defines how does a company look under these conditions, as you would. And that is the most accurate way I found to plan the company is by developing a model of the company. It's kind of like, you know, the model of your body, you know, your certain height, certain weight, and then you can then extrapolate what you can do based on your physical model as you would.
What did you use for the modeling? I mean, was it just, you know, an Excel worksheet? Was it that plus a document with some narrative? Just tell me a little more about the kind of form that the model took so you could share it with other people.
Well, it doesn't have to be an Excel spreadsheet. I mean, just defines at this revenue level, then you have this operating expense, and you know, you can model your margins, your gross margins, because, you know, if you know the cost of your product at that particular revenue level, you can calculate your gross margin, and then from there, you develop your R&D cost, your SG&A, and then that drops to the bottom line and gives you what your operating profit is. So it's pretty easy to do. I mean, it's not a complicated formula, but you need to know what your gross margins are, because that defines then all your other subsequent costs.
So for you, the gross margin was the most critical determinator in the model?
Yes, because if you don't know what your gross margin is, it's hard to really balance your company. So you have to have a pretty accurate understanding of really what your gross margins are, and we managed that. We made sure we had the right to balance of products to give us the gross margin that we needed. And so gross margin is the most important calculation as far as, so if you don't know the cost of your product, it's going to be difficult then to really model the rest of the cost.
And then, like, you built this model, so a couple things I'm curious about. So one is, you know, was it principally you building this model, or did you bring in you and your senior management team, and how did that process work? And then once you've got it constructed, you know, how did you share it more broadly across the organization?
Well, the people that will develop the model with you is, of course, your finance people. So, because they're the ones that are the watchdogs of the financials. And so I sat down with my CFO, and I would tell him how to model it. In other words, I knew what the company looked like and under certain conditions. So we had a model built from revenues that were on the worst case level all the way to revenues on the best case model. So that's the way we did it. And then we knew our costs. Once we established what the gross margin was, then the rest of the costs, R&D, SG&A, and so forth, we can easily get. And so then I just made the company fit that model so that I always had the same outcome. So the only thing that would cause it to go different is if my gross margins didn't come out as predicted, but that really never happened. So we were able to pretty accurately calculate the gross margin. And the rest of it's pretty, just drops to the bottom line. It's pretty easy to do. I know it sounds simplistic, but it really is. So the other thing that was critical here, David, that, you know, that the listeners need to understand is that I always ran the company in arrears, meaning that I never let the expenses increase until the operating model was met two quarters in a row, so that I always had some upside because I wouldn't let them increase headcount or expenses until it demonstrated to me that the company actually hit its revenue and hit its model for at least two quarters in a row sequentially.
Right. Very clever. And again, as part of that discipline that you had in running Microel, that most entrepreneurs in my experience don't happen, right? Because they usually do it the other way. We'll spend first, and then the revenue will come, and then we'll make it all up. And then, you know, how did all of the senior executive team, your first reports, so you've got this model, and you have where you're going, and you have the expenses, the gross margin that you want to hit, and you have some revenue targets that you also want to hit in your, you know, worst case, best case, and middle case scenarios. But how did they build their plan with their teams as to the actual, you know, actions that they needed to take to drive all of this forward?
Well, because each group had its own operating model, so that they also had their calculated model based on this revenue, and the people in accounting that looked at the financial structure of each of the business units, they were able to work with them, and that those people had to stay within their model. So, you know, the corporate model was the master model, and then each unit then had its own business model that they had to run their business unit to. So that worked out, you know, really, really well. Now, I want to just jump back to this thing about why other companies have difficulty, because they spend first and ask questions later, is that we weren't venture funded. So we never had that culture of spend now and then hopefully things get better in the future. We never had that. Because I was debt financed or bank financed, we had to be profitable every single quarter. So that started the culture at the very beginning. It's difficult once you're not bank financed, if you're venture financed, as you would, to stop that model of the spend now and ask questions later, so to speak.
Yet, you know, in reading Tough Things First, one of the things I really appreciated was your honesty around, you know, putting everything on the line and how you approach the banks. And, of course, they said no at first because mm-hmm. you had no, assets, and you put everything up, as I recall, your house, like everything, true entrepreneur. And they insisted on you being profitable from the get-go, and I loved how you just were very creative about finding ways to be profitable from literally Q1 on, and that drove the culture of what you built there ever after.
You made no mistake about it, David. I mean, if you're focused on revenue, you don't look at profit. We were focused on the bottom line. We've always been bottom line focused. So when you're focusing on the bottom line, you can build it up from there. This is what revenue I will need. This is the cost structure I will need. As opposed to if you just say, okay, this is my revenue I'm going to hit, and then who cares about the rest of it? That's when you run into trouble. With most of the venture capital guys, they want you just to hit the revenue. In other words, they want to see revenue as quick as possible because they want to get out. They don't worry about profitability. But that's not the way I ran my company, and I think real companies make money, and that was the focus of my crew.
And, yes, the company that I joined as a young person and stayed 20 years and built up, we were totally focused on building profit every year and just hyper-focused on that like you were and had a lot of success at that. I just want to finish up here with one more question, which is, after building all this, and committing to the plans and then executing on the plans, did you build in any celebration for employees when you hit your plans, and especially when they really knocked it out of the park? And if so, what were some of the kind of celebrations that you had as a company?
Okay, so we celebrated on a monthly basis. No, I didn't wait until the end of the quarter or the end of the year. So we were very focused on a monthly basis, and the celebration, as you would, is knowing that they would hit their bonus targets if they were to achieve it. Now, they didn't get the bonus at that point, but at least they could start seeing it build up. We had semi-annual awards dinners for people who did outstanding work within their respective units. 15, 20 people were honored, and we did that semi-annually. And annually, we would just quarterly. I would do quarterly communication meetings that were videotaped and then sent all over the world to the different groups. And I would praise them on the conference call. Those who did an outstanding job, I'd mention them in the video, and they felt like a family because we were regularly communicating with them. And that was important to them, to see this regular visual of me and talking about the numbers, talking about how we're doing. And they were all up to speed. I mean, I've had them subsequently talk to me. In fact, even yesterday, an individual called me, ex-employee, just said how much he missed the fervor and enthusiasm we had in the company. So, yes, but we did that on a quarterly basis. And then annually, of course, we did a wrap-up. Didn't throw a party or anything, but we had a wrap-up of the numbers, and senior management would then go back and visit with their respective business units, and they'd have their own little celebration.
Nice. I love that you used that video and your personal thanks to people and outstanding work so that you continue that connection through the company, which is all through Tough Things First, about how focused you were on the people and connecting everybody together as a big family. Thanks, Ray. As always, this was very insightful. Like Ray does with his portfolio companies, the ones he invests in, I help founders plan for success. If you are stuck on strategic planning, I would like to help. I can guide you through facilitating your annual and quarterly planning using a proven planning framework that drives organization-wide planning and focus. Learn more on my website, coachdjgreer.com. Thanks for tuning into the Tough Things First podcast with Ray Zinn, author of the book of the same name and Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO. You can easily subscribe to this podcast on your desktop, iOS, or Android phone to hear more of Ray's 37 years of entrepreneurial wisdom.